Okay, so get this right. Owning land in India. Before the British, it wasn't even a thing.
Yeah, totally different system. Like, forget buying and selling land. It was all about shared rights. Super interesting stuff.
Yeah, wild, right? And we're going to look at how that all changed, how those colonial policies,
Yeah.
like, flipped the script and caused major hardship.
Huge changes. Centuries-old practices just disrupted.
Right, we're talking major upheaval.
Right.
And for this deep dive, we're going deep into some fascinating sources.
Absolutely. We've got a concise history of modern India, an agrarian history of South Asia, really getting into the nitty-gritty.
By the end, you'll understand not just what happened, but how those changes still impact rural India today. It's like the ripple effect, you know?
It's amazing, really, how something from so long ago still resonates. So, yeah, land before the British, not just a commodity.
Right, like not something you just buy and sell.
Exactly. It was woven into the whole fabric of society. Imagine, like, a web connecting the people working the fields, those collecting taxes, and the rulers themselves.
It's almost like this intricate dance, right? Everyone had their role. Even temples were part of it.
Oh, absolutely. A concise history of modern India highlights how temples weren't just for worship.
Yeah, they were these massive structures, like spiritual landmarks tied to the idea of good harvests and stuff.
Rituals and beliefs all intertwined with farming. It's fascinating. But then enter the East India Company.
Oh, yeah, here come the Brits, stirring things up as always.
And things get, well, complicated. You see, they came for trade initially.
But as a concise history of modern India explains, they kind of stumbled into governing, right?
Yeah, kind of like they tripped and fell and landed right in charge. And they were so unprepared. It's like trying to fly a plane having only ever ridden a bicycle.
Right. Talk about a learning curve.
Big time. Governing a place as complex as India, it needed more than just, trading skills.
It's like they walked into this intricate tapestry and just thought, needs more red.
And their lack of understanding. Well, it led to some serious missteps, misinterpretations of the whole land system, ignoring cultural nuances. It all had consequences.
Yeah, but there were a few exceptions, right? Wasn't there a guy, Hastings, who was actually kind of into Indian culture?
Oh, yeah, Warren Hastings, the first governor general, Bengal. The British bridgehead talks about him. He was different, actually interested in understanding how things work, even started the Asiatic Society of Bengal.
It's like he realized, hey, maybe we should like learn about this place before we try to change everything.
Exactly. But sadly, most company agents didn't share his
They were
perspective.
probably too busy counting their rupees. Typical.
Well, that lack of understanding, it led to some really impactful policies. Things like the Cornwallis Settlement of 1793. That's where things get,
Messy.
you could say that. Think of the zamindars. They were traditionally like middlemen.
Between the farmers and the rulers, right? Collecting taxes and stuff.
Yeah.
Right. But the British, they wanted to simplify things. They saw these zamindars and thought, aha, landowners. Just like back home.
So they basically tried to make India's system fit into a British box.
Yeah, and they gave these zamindars fixed revenue obligations, like, here's how much you owe us no matter what.
Which sounds simple on paper, but.
But it completely missed the nuances of the zamindar's role and the consequences. Huge.
Yeah, what happened?
A concise history of modern India says that something like a third of the land in Bengal changed hands within a few years just because
Yeah.
these zamindars couldn't meet those inflexible demands.
Oh, wow. So their attempt to simplify actually made things way worse.
Absolutely. And for the farmers, it was a disaster. It went from being partners in the system to.
To basically tenants overnight, right? No
Yeah.
security, no real rights.
Exactly. And then to make things even worse, there were those British revenue demands, based on those fancy economic theories of Ricardo.
Oh, yeah, Ricardo. Wasn't he all about separating rent from revenue?
Yeah, and that idea just didn't translate to the realities of Indian farming.
Like they were trying to force a square peg into a round hole.
It just piled on more burdens for the peasantry. They didn't see those clear-cut distinctions in their daily lives. It was all just survival.
It's like sometimes those fancy theories just don't work in the real world, huh? And it wasn't just the land system that got messed up, right? What about like traditional farming practices?
Oh, yeah, those took a hit too, big time. See, the British, they were all about profit, so they pushed for these cash crops like indigo.
Indigo. The dye.
Yeah, super valuable for them, but useless for, actually feeding people. Bengal, the British bridgehead talks about this a lot, the stories of this forced cultivation, the resistance from the locals.
It's like they were prioritizing a single color over the whole rainbow of what the land could produce.
Such a good way to put it. And the consequences were serious. Food security was threatened, traditional knowledge eroded, people became dependent on the colonial market.
A vicious cycle, basically.
Exactly. So we see this pattern in Bengal, but this is just the tip of the iceberg. Did it happen elsewhere?
As the British took control of more of India, did they bring these ideas with them?
Absolutely. While the Cornwallis settlement was specific to Bengal, that same flawed thinking, it shaped policies across India. It's like a
domino effect.
Yeah, like a domino effect. And one of the things they introduced in some places, revenue farming.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that when they basically outsourced tax collection to the highest bidder?
Exactly. And often that led to some serious exploitation. These guys, they just wanted to squeeze every last rupee out of the peasants. Profit over people, you know?
It's like good intentions gone bad, but on a massive scale.
Sadly, yeah. And on top of all this, we can't forget about those other factors at play. Remember those Maratha raids we talked about earlier?
Oh, yeah, right. Those were happening before the British even showed up.
Yeah.
Adding another layer of instability to everything.
Exactly. Described in some historical accounts, they really caused disruption, especially in Western Bengal. Depopulation, chaos. It wasn't the only Awai problem, but when the British came in, it definitely didn't help. Compounded the existing issues.
It's like a perfect storm of challenges, right? All coming together to reshape rural India.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing how events from centuries ago can still have such a lasting impact. It really makes you think.
Makes you think about the choices made by those in power, the unintended consequences, and how those consequences can ripple through generations. It's like heavy stuff.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this deep dive so fascinating. It's not just about learning the facts. It's about understanding the complexities of history and how those complexities continue to shape the world around us.
So we've got the intricate pre-colonial system, the East India Company blundering into governance, the disastrous Cornwallis settlement, and that ripple effect spreading across India. Phew, what a whirlwind.
Yeah, and we've only just scratched the surface.
There's so much more to uncover. So what's next on our deep dive journey? Where do we go from here?
Well, now that we've laid the groundwork, we can delve into a really crucial question. Did the British consciously set out to destroy these traditional systems? Or were their actions driven by, let's say, a genuine, though misguided, belief in their own methods?
Ooh, that's a juicy one. I'm ready to dive in. Let's unpack this historical mystery.
You know, it's easy to oversimplify history, see everything in black and white, right? Good guys, bad guys. But this whole thing with British colonialism, way more nuanced than that.
Yeah, for sure. We've already seen how, like, one little misinterpretation can snowball into something huge.
Yeah.
So, like, British intentions, where do we even start?
Well, some historians, they argue that the British, they genuinely believe they were modernizing India, bringing it in line with, you know, Western ideas of progress and efficiency.
Right, like, we're here to help. But that modernization came at a pretty steep price, didn't it?
Yeah, you can't deny that. Especially for, you know, those at the bottom of the ladder. It's hard to reconcile that with good intentions, especially when you see what happened with policies like the Cornwallis settlement.
Right. It's like, oops, sorry we wrecked your entire rural economy, but hey, at least it's modern now.
Exactly. So that's the heart of the debate, really. Were they genuinely trying to improve things, even if they went about it the wrong way? Or was there something more cynical going on, like a deliberate attempt to grab resources and dismantle the existing power structures?
It's tough, right?
Yeah.
Because the sources we're looking at don't exactly give us clear-cut answers.
It's like trying to solve a puzzle where half the pieces are missing, and some of them might not even belong.
Right. It's history, not a jigsaw puzzle.
Exactly. We're dealing with human actions here. Messy, full of contradictions, rarely a simple explanation. So we have to look at the evidence, consider different interpretations, and honestly, acknowledge the limits of our own understanding.
So how do we even approach this puzzle then? How do we untangle these motivations, especially when they seem so contradictory?
Well, maybe instead of getting stuck on, like, good intentions versus bad intentions, we try looking at the bigger picture, you know, the context, the ideologies of the time, the power dynamics at play.
Right, because we can't forget that they were operating within a colonial framework.
Exactly. Which inherently involves, you know, one society asserting control over another, and that often leads to imposing values that just don't fit.
Like trying to jam a square block into a round hole.
Perfect analogy. And the British, they were steeped in those Enlightenment ideas, that belief in, you know, Western superiority. And that sense of cultural superiority, whether they were conscious of it or not, it definitely influenced their policies.
And those policies, well, we've seen how they often ignored the realities of Indian society, and that led to some pretty disastrous consequences.
It's a real cautionary tale, you know? about the dangers of imposing your own worldview on another culture without truly understanding it. Like, just because something works in one place doesn't mean it'll work everywhere.
It's like assuming everyone wants pizza just because you love it.
Exactly. So this whole story of agrarian change in India under the British, it reminds us how important context is, and perspective, and critical thinking. When we're looking at history, we have to grapple with those uncomfortable truths, question those assumptions, and realize that history, it's messy, and it's complex.
So did they believe they were helping India? Or were they just looking out for their own interests? And it feels like we've got to ask these tough questions.
And those questions, they don't have easy answers. We got to dive deep into the sources, weigh the evidence, consider all those different perspectives. It's a journey of exploration, discovery. It challenges us to confront our own biases about the past.
That's what makes these deep dives so engaging, right?
Yeah.
It's not just about like memorizing facts and dates. It's about developing a deeper understanding of these forces that shape our world.
Exactly. And that understanding is key to building a better future, right? Learning from those past mistakes, recognizing the dangers of unchecked power and cultural arrogance, valuing diversity, respecting different ways of life.
So we've explored this clash of ideologies, that back and forth between like trying to modernize and causing all this damage. But what about the people who are actually living through all this change? Where do their stories fit into this whole puzzle?
Such a good question. It leads us to the next layer of our deep dive. We've looked at those broad strokes of change, those big historical events, but now it's time to zoom in on the human impact, the lived experiences, those who are navigating this really tumultuous period.
Let's hear those stories. The voices of the peasants, the zamindars, the communities who had their lives completely upended.
Exactly. Through those individual experiences, we can understand the complexities and contradictions of this period on a deeper level. It's about bringing history to life, seeing the human faces behind the dates and the statistics.
Okay, I'm ready. Let's dive into those personal stories and see how these grand narratives played out in the lives of everyday people. Okay, so we've like zoomed out and looked at the big picture, how the British changed India's rural landscape. But now I really want to zoom in, you know, hear about the people who actually lived through it all. What were their stories?
It's wild to imagine, right? Put yourself in their shoes. Say you're a peasant farmer in Bengal, late 1700s.
Okay, I'm imagining. Got my peasant hat on. What's next?
Your family, they've worked at the same land for generations, right? You pay a share of your harvest to the zamindar. He's like the local leader, handles things with the rulers. It's a system you know. It's got its problems, sure, but...
But it's familiar. You know what to expect.
Exactly. And then, boom, everything changes. British show up. New rules.
The coats are here. Time to panic.
Pretty much. And suddenly, you're not a partner in the system anymore. You're a tenant.
At the mercy of the zamindar, who's basically become a British-style landlord now.
Exactly. And he's got these fixed taxes to pay no matter what. So that security you had, that connection to the land your family's tended for centuries, gone.
If the zamindar can't pay, you're out, right? Whole livelihood gone. Poof.
Just like that. And it's all based on these economic theories that, like, don't even make sense in the context of Indian farming.
Right. Trying to force a square peg in a round hole again. A concise history of modern India really captures the chaos of it all.
It wasn't just economic hardship. It was social upheaval. Many zamindars, they couldn't keep up with those new demands, had to sell their land.
So this huge shift in land ownership, it didn't just disrupt the economy, it like fractured communities.
Absolutely. And then there's that story of Indigo, Bengal. The British bridgehead goes into it in detail. Farmers forced to grow this cash crop.
Indigo, like the dye.
Yeah, super valuable to the British, but not exactly something you can eat.
So you're abandoning the crops that actually feed your family to grow something that'll be shipped off to who knows where.
Imagine that, right? Generations of farming knowledge tossed aside to grow something you don't even need. It's
heartbreaking, really. And switching from food crops to cash crops, that had to have some serious consequences, right?
Huge consequences. Food security went down. Traditional knowledge eroded. People became dependent on the colonial market.
Another one of those vicious cycles.
Exactly. And this pattern, it wasn't unique to Bengal. As the British gained more control, these ideas spread.
So they were basically exporting their bad ideas all across India.
Sadly, yeah. And in some places, they introduced something called revenue farming. Basically, they gave local strongmen the power to collect taxes.
So basically, outsourcing oppression sounds efficient.
Efficient, maybe, but often incredibly brutal, these guys. They just wanted to line their own pockets, extract as much as they could from the peasants.
Profit over people. Always a winning strategy. So you've got the zamindari system, where traditional leaders are turned into struggling landlords. And then you've got these ruthless revenue farmers squeezing everyone dry.
And right in the middle of all this, the peasant farmer, the backbone of India's agriculture, bearing the brunt of these changes. It's a story of resilience, adaptation, but also just immense hardship. People facing forces beyond their control, trying to make sense of a world turned upside down.
Yeah, these stories really make history come alive. They remind us that behind all the big events, the dates, the policies, there are real people, real lives, real struggles.
And by understanding their experiences, we can see how the legacy of these policies continues to this day. The changes in land ownership, the shift to cash crops, the exploitative systems, it all still shapes India's rural landscape.
So, what does all this mean for us now? Why should we care about what happened centuries ago?
It's about understanding the legacy of colonialism, you know, how it shaped power structures, economies, even cultural identities. We can see the roots of inequality, the dangers of unchecked power, and why respecting different ways of life is so important.
Like you said before, history isn't just some dusty old textbook. It's a living story that continues to impact us today.
Exactly. And maybe, just maybe, by understanding the past, we can work towards a better future.
Wow, okay. That's a lot to process. So we've explored this massive agrarian transformation, this clash of ideologies, and those human stories that bring it all to life.
It's been a journey, hasn't it? From those intricate systems of pre-colonial India to the East India Company's blunders, the consequences of those policies, and those personal experiences that make this history so compelling.
Yeah, it's been eye-opening.
We've seen how, even seemingly small actions can have ripple effects that last for centuries. It's a reminder to always consider the context, question your assumptions, and approach history with, a sense of curiosity and humility.
And to remember that behind those sweeping changes, there are individual lives, each with its own story of resilience and adaptation.
Well said. It's been a fascinating exploration, and I hope our listeners found it as thought-provoking as we have.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep learning from the past.